to be honest, that's probably like the hardest thing is like, you know, you're with your kids a lot more and quite often things just don't go according to plan. For me, I find it hard to get my kids to do certain things. So I just gave up.
Hey, Dave, how are you? I can't believe we're already at least middle of January. Feels like it's flying by.
It's pretty quick, 18th of Jan, as if the new year didn't happen. It's moving in full swing.
Completely. And we are getting very close to the end of season 2 already.
Yes, this episode and the next one. And we've got some big stuff coming right after. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am really excited that we are able to air this episode because this one, we had a little issue, didn't we?
Yes, this was recorded a long time back and we lost the audio. And thankfully, you've got an amazing team. Shout out to Jovan who could rescue the files and we've got it back. So I'm really excited because this was one of the most incredible episodes in terms of, yeah, I don't know how to introduce that. You want to introduce this episode?
So today we have on our show, Rosie Sherry, and you know her through some online communities. But when you introduced her to me, it was around this idea of unschooling, which I was like, what are you talking about? What is that? I had no idea.
Well, Rosie is one of those persons. I think she's a Wonder Woman, right? She's got so much going on. And if you're into Twitter, if you're into indie hacking, or if you're into sort of startup building, you would have encountered her or heard of her someplace or the other. When you think of community building, Rosie is the person to go to. And she's been doing that for ages. Anything solid about how to run a community, build a community, online communities, I mean, Rosie is the person. And so one of these days when I was just kind of following her work, spying on her and enjoying her writings, I discovered that she has 5 kids and she's unschooling all of them.
So for those who may have never heard of unschooling, I know I was certainly not familiar with the concept. It's a form of homeschooling, except for the education is revolving around the interests of the child versus some kind of set curriculum. And for a control freak like me, I'm still working on wrapping my head around it. And there's a catchphrase Rosie uses, and I don't know if she knew it at the time, but it has been a bit of guiding advice for you and I when we've really had kind of our knickers in a crunch about things with the kids. I hope that our listeners really enjoy this today, and if it's something they haven't heard of, that they can just kind of open their mind to it and have a new perspective on something I'd certainly never considered before.
Yeah, it has been mind-bending in many ways. There were a lot of nuggets of gold, a lot of things that we walked away with, some very actionable that we try to put into use, and we talk about it. There's a nice segment at the end of this episode on what we took home and how did we adapt. But then there's stuff like unschooling that you talked about, absolutely new concept, mind-bending, and we have to explore that further, Tiffany. I think we have to get into that. It's just worth doing that.
I think so too.
So without further ado, here is Rosie Sherry for you.
I'm Rosie Sherry. I'm originally born in London, but my mom's Colombian. My dad was Irish. Traveled a lot when I was younger, from like the age of 10. Was in Indonesia for a bit, was in Colombia for a bit. Came back when I was 18 on my own. And I came back to the UK, I should say. And I've been here ever since, mostly in Brighton.
Oh, Brighton.
Yeah.
So, Deep, I have to make a connection for you. Chris Dodds, who was on the show, his sister, Jen, who he talked about on the show, she and her husband went to Brighton in college, and they named their first child Brighton because of Brighton in the UK. Right. So,
there you go. That's a very Brighton thing to do.
I can't wait to hear your kids' names, Rosie.
I've got 3 boys and then 2 girls. And our three boys are ABC. So Aaron, Ben, Cody. So there you go. That's a funny. We tried to go D and then E, but our fourth child was a girl. And we hated all the names that started with D. So we skipped it and went to E, which is Eloise. And lots of people ask us if there was like some tragedy with D, but there wasn't. It was just like, it's a bit awkward. And then with our last child, we just chose something completely different, which is P for Piper. So, yeah, but ABC is kind of nice.
You just wanted to get to Z much quicker.
Yeah.
I know where this is getting.
Yeah. So we got five kids aged 3, 6, 9, almost 16 and 17. So, yeah, my eldest is coming up to that age where he could potentially move out pretty soon, or he could potentially have kids pretty soon. I don't think that will happen, but at least not yet. But it's just like interesting. I don't know how I've got a 17-year-old right now. So that kind of feels weird to be at that kind of stage of parenting and having to go through all the stages. There was a point, like when my youngest was born, that I had like a child in each age range. So I had a newborn, I had a toddler, I had a kid, I had a preteen, and then I had a teen.
Oh, wow.
It was a bit mind-blowing, to be honest. Mind-blowing, as it's not always easy to deal with all the moving plates. But yeah, I guess that's me. We live in Brighton at the moment. We've been here for 22 years. I've been here. My husband's been here a bit longer. We tried moving away once to Cambridge. It was nice, but it wasn't the same. So we came back to Brighton after 18 months. And yeah, I've been in tech for 20 years as well. My husband's in tech, and mostly I've been bootstrapping stuff or indie hacking stuff. I bootstrapped Ministry of Testing, and I stepped back from that a couple of years ago. I still own that as a company, but don't really get involved day to day anymore.
Is your husband also from the UK?
Yeah, he's Scottish.
Hey.
So yeah, I often get accused of being Scottish. I think his accent has kind of rubbed off on me a bit. Yeah, so there's that part as well.
So you guys are a little multi-culty as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And I bet there's a lot of Colombian and Indonesian influence as well in upbringing, is it?
Yeah, definitely. I lived in Colombia for 5 years. I was there when like Pablo Escobar was being hunted. So that was interesting.
Where did you live in Colombia?
We were in Medellin for a while, and then we went to another city, Armenia, which is further away, and I guess not as dangerous as Medellin was at that point.
Yeah.
So I often tell people to watch Narcos, and like a lot of the scenes in Narcos feel like memories to me. Things like, like the policeman and like police getting shot and all the violence and stuff. Just, you know, I remember a lot of that stuff going on.
How old were you when you lived there?
I was 13 to 18.
So that's a pretty impressionable time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I came back to the UK.
Yeah.
As soon as I could, to be honest. I feel like in my heart, I've always felt like the UK is my home. And as soon as I came back, I felt that coming back. I knew that this is where I needed to be. So yeah, I've literally not gone anywhere since. I mean, I've traveled a bit, but moving wise, I'm quite happy just to stay here and not move.
Yeah, that's nice.
I think maybe part of that is because like I moved so much when I was younger. It's like I felt like I've had enough of this. I just want to stay put.
So you have some roots. Well, that's actually what I was going to ask you. We find so often that our childhoods form us for better or worse, right? And also help influence our decisions as we become parents. And sometimes it's, no, we did this, and so I'm really going to stick with this. But sometimes it's, I did it this way, so we're going way the other direction. So it sounds like moving was one of those things for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely identify with that. I guess changing of environments isn't something that kind of appeals to me. I know there's world schoolers, for example, they love to travel and do stuff. But for me, it's like there's nothing more stressful like traveling.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about your childhood and what that was like and what influenced your decisions as a parent to go in this super unconventional way that we're going to be talking about unschooling? But first, just, you know, about you and how you were raised and your parents and all that good stuff.
Where do I start?
$1 million question, huh?
Yeah, like I said, like my dad was Irish and my mum's Colombian, so there's that kind of cultural mixture that wasn't always common, I guess, when in the UK at that time as well. And I guess I think about that a lot, but at the same time, especially like with Brexit, I guess I've been thinking about it more. I have a British passport, but then if I was born like 2 or 3 years later, I wouldn't have one. And that troubles me sometimes, or that plays at the back of my mind. As someone who's born to different nationalities in London and in a different country that they're from. It's just interesting, I guess. But I identify as British more than anything else. Like, if I go to Colombia, I don't feel Colombian. I don't feel Irish. I feel British. And that's where I feel comfortable, I guess. It's where I feel at home. When I was 10, we went to Indonesia. We lived in Jakarta for 4 years. It was a nice experience. And yeah, I went to international school there for most of that time. And that was good, positive experience. But then going to Colombia, I guess, was like a total flip side of things. It's just like, even though I had been to Colombia, visited a number of times, I think, like, again, going back to that idea that I feel British, is that I don't feel Colombian. I was thrown into Spanish-speaking schools, and I didn't speak Spanish. I didn't want to learn to speak Spanish. So all of those kind of things were just, like, big blockers for me at that point in my life. Mm-hmm. And actually, after, like, a couple of years, I just stopped going to school. Refused school.
Oh, wow. So are you bilingual now?
Not really. I can speak bad Spanish. I can understand it. I can understand conversations. I can listen. I can watch movies and mostly understand stuff. But I've never read a book in Spanish, for example.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Even in the few years of school you were there. But so you stopped going.
Yeah, I just hated it so much.
Do you think that influenced your decision to unschool?
I don't know, quite possibly. You know, I think there's a good chance. I left like Colombia when I was 18 without any qualifications, and I made my way in life without anything. I tried like looking into things like doing A-levels when I came back to the UK in university, but it just didn't stick with any of that long enough. I wasn't motivated to stick with it long enough. And because I came back to the UK on my own, I had to support myself. My parents didn't like have the money to support me. So I just worked and I found my way through working and I found opportunities. My husband's a few years older than me. He's like 7, 8 years older than me. And he helped me get my first job in tech. And I think once you get your first job in something, it becomes much easier to get other jobs. And people almost stop looking at the qualifications. And I think it was more that experience than like my experience in Colombia that made me realize that we can make our way in life if we choose to. We don't have to have all the things that society says you need to have. It doesn't mean it will be easy, but I've proven it, I guess, that I can stick with a career, some kind of career. It had its ups and downs, but you know, I've made it work, and I still have no qualifications. Absolutely, you know, nothing. I'm passionate and I'm an expert. I class myself as an expert in what I do. I'm very capable and all of that kind of stuff. And I think it's really all that kind of experience where along the way I started to question things for my kids. Like my two older kids who are 16, 17, they went to school for a few years, but I always did it reluctantly. I didn't really want to send them. There was always something there, like, telling me that, like, actually school isn't all that. And we tried alternative schools, and actually we had a really bad experience with one. And it was a private school as well, which was unfortunate. And that experience taught me that no one is ever going to care for your kids as much as you do. And no matter how much they say that school is the best, they're doing their best for the kids. It's just not true. It's a system, and they work for the system. That was just like a huge kind of slap in the face.
I think you're completely right, and I can identify with that. You are uniquely, you know, positioned. No one can care more about your children than you. Nobody can make better decisions than you. No one's going to put in that time and effort like you. And my daughter was born with a birth defect that required surgery. And I was being told, no, it's fine. She's fine. Sometimes this happens. Sometimes that happens. All good and normal. And I was saying, no, it's not. No, it's not. And had I not continued to push and push and push, she very likely wouldn't be here today. Wow. And then when you have that experience, whether it's earlier or later in your child's life, you never can go back to the when you trusted everyone to make the best and do their best for your kid. If you are interested, I would love to hear a little bit more about the situation at the private school where you had this realization.
Yeah, I probably don't want to go into specifics, just like
sure.
out of respect of my son. But lots of it came down to them just like almost like bullying him and picking on him and blaming him for everything and then trying to claim that he was the problem. And then they started monitoring his every move and taking notes. And we weren't aware of any of this. And then they called us one day when I was at work and they said, we've called social services in because we believe there's issues with your son and we're not allowed to tell you why. And that came out of the blue. We had never suspected anything was wrong, but they had been doing all this stuff behind the scenes. And then they called social services in.
Well, wow.
As like a parent, you're just like what the hell is going on? Is our son okay? And like at that point, we trusted the school. We had no reason not to trust them.
Sure.
And all of that stuff. And it was just like, and that was like on a Friday afternoon. And so it was like the whole weekend we had to wait to speak to someone and we had no idea what was going on.
Which feels like eternity in a situation like this.
It was literally eternity. And we felt that for, you know, I still think about that. And I feel like that thing, you're just like, oh my God, it's just like completely sends me over the edge. Even still now, like 15 years later or 12 years later.
Your son was 5 that time?
I think, probably 5, 6, maybe. I think he was 6. And then we tried to get help from the school. We tried to go to someone else on the board and say, what are we supposed to do? We don't understand what's happening. And no one would help us. And then a few days later, we were just like, we're taking him out. We're taking him out. And then, I don't know, a short while after, a few weeks after, I went to someone who I knew was on the board and I told her what was happening. And then she helped us go through it. So she was like some kind of trustee for the school. But if we hadn't done that, nothing would have happened. And I kind of forget the details now, but they admitted they messed up in the end.
Wow.
So it wasn't us. But for us to go through all of that, I was just like, no, thank you. Yeah. Never again. And
I imagine your son couldn't explain much either at that age or it was how was he feeling?
Exactly. In his eyes, there was nothing wrong that was going on. He doesn't even know about it. Now, we don't talk about it because it's not an issue. He won't remember any of it. But for us as parents, it's just like, we want to protect our kids. And then when you have trust in the school system, even a private school, you think that private schools would be better at handling stuff. It's just like, no, it's still to this day, I don't understand why it happened. But they had a co-headship at the time and they basically left, silently sacked or something. I don't even know. But the school's no longer around now, so there's that.
That's validating, isn't it?
Things happened, yeah. And so is it fair to say that the unschooling that happened was a consequence of what transpired?
I'm not sure if it's a consequence because, like, I would say probably part consequence. That definitely, like, impacted us on how we felt about schools in general. They did have a positive score. Basically, after that experience, we moved because of that, because it was like such a like traumatic experience. We were like, we're leaving Brighton. We don't know what to do. But we're just getting out of here and try something new. And we went to Cambridge, and that was good. That was good for my boys. They had a, you know, good time. But we didn't, like, as parents, enjoy Cambridge, so we ended up coming back down to Brighton after that. And it was then, around then, that we decided to homeschool. I think it was a combination of lots of things, like, I had wanted to homeschool before, but I didn't have the courage to do it. I felt like financially I couldn't do it, taking that time out of work to do it. I think, like, basically with homeschooling, you have to kind of, in my opinion, redefine your life, redesign your life around your kid. And I think that's probably the hardest part of committing to that kind of life, is committing to the fact that you don't have anywhere to dump your kids from, you know, school hours.
So a question I have for you is, you've explained how, where the challenges were, and that you were considering all those things, but ultimately you still made the decision to do it. So the positives for you guys must have outweighed what the challenges were going to be, or at least you hoped. Can you tell me a little bit more about, like, why it was so important to you guys to make this decision, and what you thought it would give to your kids or your family?
I guess my personal experience, that I could see within myself, that I didn't need qualifications to go through life. I could see more and more with my boys' school that they were doing things that they didn't actually enjoy. And I had read up, I had like started educating myself about homeschooling and unschooling and all these like kind of different approaches. And I guess also working for myself as well, that has a big part to play with it. I didn't have a normal job either. I was just like making my way with my business. And just the more I did that, the more I realized that actually, you know, the system from all sorts of kind of angles doesn't work. I don't believe like the what would you call it? The work system, the idea of following a career path, the idea of full-time employment constantly generally works. Yeah. I think there's huge problems there. And I just like relate working life to school life. And at the time, I was working for myself and making that work. And I could see that the same principles would apply to homeschooling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of took the jump to do it. And I guess trying to trust that I was doing the right thing and believing that we were heading down the right path. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, that's probably like the hardest thing is, you know, you're with your kids a lot more, and quite often things just don't go according to plan. It's, for me, I find it hard to get my kids to do certain things. So I just gave up.
I actually love that. Sometimes, like, I hate to admit this, I'm a controller. And I always believe there is a way, like there is a mechanism, a carrot, like some creative thing that will entice my kid to XYZ. And I really have to say that I think sometimes the best advice as a parent is just give up, let it be and see what happens.
Let it go.
And that's basically our philosophy at the moment. Like anytime we try to do anything curriculum related, it doesn't work. So like all my boys have been like this. There'll be stages where they don't do much or they don't read anything, but then they'll go through like a whole year of just going intensely into something. As an example, I've got a 9-year-old. He's never been to school, and I never taught him to read. I read to him sometimes, not too often. Whenever he wanted to, I would read to him and I'd, you know, encourage reading, but probably not as much as other parents would. I think there's a lot of pressure to constantly be reading to your kids.
Yeah.
And I feel like I failed at that quite a lot, but, you know, I still did it. And I would encourage him to read sometimes, but he always did it with reluctance. And then he was 8 and he was still, he could read bits, But he hated it. He was like stamping his feet down. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? He's going to read. I was like, I'm sure of it. He's going to read. All the unschooling parents say that they'll read when they're ready to read. And when he's 8 and not reading, you start to like question like whether you're doing the right thing. And then just something clicked. I got him a Dr. Seuss book and I just gave it to him and I asked him to, you know, read it. And he read it. And I think it was at that point that he realized that he could read. And that was like the start of lockdown. So about a year ago. And yeah, at the same time, we gave him audiobooks to listen to. So I think the two combined, like more advanced audiobooks with like really interesting stories mm-hmm. that he was into. So that combined with some easy books, he realized that he wanted to read. And oh my God, he just hasn't stopped reading since. Like this past year, he's just read so many books, at least 50. I've lost count.
Oh, so it's like he's discovered this new world that has opened up to him and he's really interested in it now.
Yeah, he was read Harry Potter twice. You know, it's just stuff like that. And,
I love that. Solid.
And like he would wake up in the morning and we wouldn't see him until lunchtime because he would wake up and roll out of bed and just start reading. And we wouldn't disturb him. We'd just wait for him to come down when he's hungry kind of thing.
They always come right back when they're hungry.
Do you wonder what is happening in his mind when he was not reading or when he was pretending to not read? Do you ever wonder what is going on? Like what must be absorbing so much stuff? It's just that he's not communicating back in the way that we want to hear that.
Yeah, right? I just think like my philosophy over time has kind of been like as Rosie, I don't want to be told what to read ever. I don't want to ever be given a book and say, here, you have to read this. Because I know that if someone did that to me, I would maybe read it, but I would hate the whole process of reading it. Unless I was truly interested in it. But if I was forced to read a book that I wasn't interested in, I wouldn't enjoy it. And I would kick up a fuss. And I would like probably drag my heels or take a really long time to read it or read it and not really process it or understand it. And I think basically over time, I've just started treating my kids like adults.
Something I'm a little bit curious about, and actually first on treating your kids like adults, I really love that. And there's a time and place, right? But one thing I've always done is speak to my daughter as though she were. And she always had, I remember someone, we were at a barbecue once and they said, wow, she has such incredible syntax. And I thought, I've never one day in her life helped her work on her syntax. We never like sat down and she was like 4 or 5. But it's because I always spoke to her as though she were up here. And if she didn't understand the vocabulary, she could ask or learn it through context as children learn everything in language. But I think it's really important because this unschooling thing is, I've never really heard of it. I'm familiar with homeschooling. Here in Germany, that's actually illegal. Like children are mandated to go to school. So I would imagine a lot of people hear it. Like, what is the difference between homeschooling and the principles and philosophies of unschooling?
It is different to everyone, but homeschooling is more structured, generally more following a curriculum of your choice. Uh-huh. You can still design it how you like. And there's lots of people taking different approaches. I know there's a lot of families who like the Montessori way, so they do Montessori inspired activities. Mm-hmm. Or there's the Steiner way, Waldorf way, things like that. Like parents often are influenced by different educational philosophies. I'm very much inspired by Montessori. I like that as an approach. And it depends on the country that you live in. Some countries, there's rules where you have to report back and kids have to have tests every year. So it really depends where you live and what you can get away with, to be honest. I feel quite lucky in the UK, at least at the moment, they're quite relaxed about things. We have to do a report once a year just to explain what each child has been up to. But even then, often they don't even request that. And if your kids never go to school, quite often they don't even realize they're not at school, and you're not obligated to do these reports. You're not obligated to have visits. Unless they have some cause for concern, then they might push for that. And I think sometimes they do get involved if they are concerned about the child for whatever reason. But generally, like, we've been unschooling for something like 9 years now, and I've probably sent off a handful of reports in that time.
So for unschooling on a daily basis, what does that look like for you guys? I mean, it sounds like your kids are still learning. So how are they coming to these things?
And I would love to add on to that in terms of also your personal life, your time, your work time. How does a typical day in life look like?
Yeah. So I'll start with a typical day of life and like weave in the kind of stuff we do. And I guess there's COVID life and pre-COVID life as well.
Right.
But I'll speak like from the angle of pre-COVID, just like what we used to do, at least pre-COVID, because yeah, there was a bit more. But at the moment, because we don't have any childcare, we've always like sent our kids to nursery until they turn 5, like a Montessori nursery. Mm-hmm. And that's always been good for us as parents. Personally, I find the age under 5 quite tough, and it's constant every day. It's tough. So we've always opted for part-time nursery options to give us a break. In theory, I'm not like against having support. It's just the idea of like full-time school every day is not something that I think is healthy. But generally, at the moment, I get up with the kids in the morning and I do stuff with them until midday. And then my teenage son helps out for a couple of hours with the younger ones. And then my husband will take over. And what I do with my kids during those kind of like from 6 a.m., I guess, my youngest one gets up, till midday-ish, really depends on the moods we're in. There's no school run to prepare for. And that's, you know, amazing not to have to do that. We sign them up to activities that they're interested in. So my 9-year-old, not at the moment, but he used to do football. He used to do gymnastics. He used to do jiu-jitsu. At one point, he had like an activity every day. It was mostly focused on sports because that's what appealed to him. Mm-hmm. And I guess the idea behind that was these are all things that he had choices to do. So we would, you know, I guess our approach is as parents, we would try to find things that would be interesting for them to do that they would say yes to. But they can also say no to anything. And I think that's quite important to not like force kids to do things. I think as a society, we feel like we have to force them to suffer.
Yeah. And
that's also a skill to learn, right? Suffering in silence.
I think there's a lot of suffering in school that people don't really realize. And there's a lot of unintentional suffering that we force on our kids without like properly thinking it through because we're just like so focused on the norms. But yeah, that was like those activities for my son. He was like doing stuff every day. We actually had to pull back some of the activities because it was just like too much for us to manage. They were all things that he wanted to do and he was always up for them. And I think that's the kind of beauty of it is that when they're up for it, it's easy. They jump out of bed, they get ready quickly, they go off running. Mm-hmm. And that's such a good life to lead rather than, for example, if they weren't enjoying something or didn't want to go to school, it's just you're dragging them out of bed, you're forcing them to get ready, all those kind of things. It's like we have none of that. And then anything around that is just they learn through life. We have rules around screen time, not very strict rules, but like kind of change it often depending how we feel and how old the kids are. But generally speaking, we'll don't do screens like before midday. Kind of thing, just to stop them like building up those habits of jumping straight onto screens.
Mm-hmm.
We're not anti-screens at all. I work in tech. I love my screens, and I think
you're normal like us. Very normal people, right?
Yeah, and I, you know, there's a lot of debate around that. There's a lot of unschooling families who just allow their kids to choose anything they want to do. We're not like that. We try to balance what we believe is a good, healthy life, and we try to bring that balance to our kids. But at the same time, we try not to say no. I like to say yes to my kids, but sometimes we have to say no. And then I guess the other aspect to that is, because we've got five kids, it's a lot to juggle. But like the three older kids, they're very independent. So I think from like age 8 upwards, life gets really easy, in my opinion. So I'm looking forward to that.
Thank goodness. Thanks for that message. I was hoping there was some positive news for me there.
If there were a continuum between Rosie and I would say you fall a little bit towards my side. And as far as like the control and always wanting what's best and pushing what's best. So I don't think 8 is the magic number for you. I think it gets easier, but not to burst your bubble. I don't know. I'm just wondering like how it just feels like you have to be so laid back and to be able to just go with whatever it is that your kids want. And also managing, it's clear you also have values that you deeply believe in. And of course, as parents, we always want to share those values with our children and bring them up in that way. And so it's a little bit hard for me to wrap my mind around all of this freedom, probably because I never had it. In America, it's very different. It's something we talk about quite a bit here since I'm raising my daughter here in Germany, and even here, freedom and children, it comes earlier for them. So I'm just wondering, for those of us super uptight parents who are supposed to pave the way for our children and also create independence and create all these opportunities and make sure they are learning and all of the things that we're putting on ourselves, are there any like just small things that we can introduce into our life, into our parenting styles, that we can be a little bit more like you, a little bit more free, a little bit more easygoing, a little bit more supportive of just what the kid wants or what they don't want?
Yep. I think it's important to realize that this is like also like a 9-year journey. So it's not like being overnight.
So where you are today is not where you started.
Exactly. We've learned a lot. We've tried many different things to get to a place where we feel comfortable. I would say we probably feel comfortable at the moment, but like the job is never done and we're still always learning. And like every child is different. We're learning about our kids. We've discovered we've got neurodiverse kids now. So that adds, you know, additional challenges into play. I should say neurodiverse kid, but we probably have two other. I can see the signs now that we recognize the signs with one. We think there's at least two others that are pretty similar. So for me, I just think it's impossible to tell parents what to do. But I think the best thing you can do is just try to work with your kids as much as possible and to forget like what other people tell you. And that's vague and it's easily said than done. But I think as society is moving on, as we become more aware of how every human being is different and every human being has different needs, let's look at each of our children and see what's best for them. And that could be school. We've debated school for our girls. They walk past our local school and they say they want to go. But at the same time, it's like, you know, that's a bit of a fantasy for them because they don't really know what it's like on the inside. But as a parent, I want to respect that interest as well. Mm-hmm. If they do want to go, we would look into those possibilities because it could be good for them. Who knows, right? To be honest, it's about letting go of things little by little, letting go of ideas that are these misconceptions that you have, and experimenting with things that work for you. And I think what works for us is going to be very different to what works for other families. And I've got nothing against people who want to go to school. or people who have to go to school. I don't have anything against that. What I do struggle with is people not being able to understand the choices that I make. And they think I'm a bit crazy for doing it. It doesn't bother me so much these days. The questions unschoolers get all the time is like, how will your kids be able to function in society if they don't go to school for 12 years? But the more you detach yourself from the idea of this, having to go through the system, the more you realize that actually there's so many things that they just don't need. And you don't see it until you're out of the system. And I recognize that. But, you know, it still means that I have to keep answering the same questions time and time again.
What are some of the common misconceptions that you would like to dispel? Like, we have a real life unschooler here with us. What are some of those and how would you answer that?
Yeah, the most common one is like, how are you going to socialize your kids?
And that's not like, a problem if you have five, right?
So not a problem if you have five. Absolutely no problem. They don't ask, oh, your kids must have really strong relationships with each other, a strong bond. They never care about that. It's always about how are they going to socialize with other kids? Like the idea that good socialization is being in a room with 30 other kids where most of them you don't particularly enjoy their company. That's how I tend to respond. But when my older boys were at school, they always had one or two friends max from a class. And I know my kids don't really like big groups. They struggle in big groups. It's too much for them to handle. My nine-year-old hates parties because he can't stand the noise and all of that. He really doesn't like that kind of environment. But he loves playing with friends one-on-one or maybe three of them or something, like really small group stuff. So that's one of them. The other one is, well, how are they going to learn if they don't have a like curriculum to follow?
I mean, the kids do all these activities and it seems to me like maybe you even have more time for the things that you love and the activities that you love outside of school. And yeah, you're socializing there.
At the end of the day, we socialize when we want to socialize. We've got the choice of who to socialize with and when and how. I think generally in society, there's a lot of situations you get put in that aren't really good for you. Like at school, there's a lot of bullying going on. As an example, there's a lot of mental health issues. It's almost hilarious, I would say, that more people aren't speaking up against those things with schools and really looking deep into the issues around that. I think it's a big problem. There's a book called Hold On To Your Kids. I wish I had read that when I was starting out, but that talks a lot about like the relationships between kids and adults and how that's the best thing for kids rather than relationships between kids and kids. It becomes a really unhealthy place for kids to rely on other kids, basically.
The blind leading the blind, yeah?
Yeah, basically, because kids look to other kids to lead them, but the other kids don't know what they're doing and they're not emotionally ready or psychologically ready to handle a lot of stuff. I'd recommend reading the book. When I read that, and that was only like 3 or 4 years ago, that kind of reinforced my commitment to unschooling, that I felt like I was doing the right thing. I felt like we were focused in as much as we can in our family, on our relationships, on supporting our kids, on having trust with our kids, for them knowing that they can come to us no matter what. It's far from perfect. It's not easy with teenagers. You know, our kids are generally good kids and they help each other out. They teach each other. My nine-year-old teaches my six-year-old Xbox, Minecraft at the moment, as an example. And they wouldn't be able to do that if they were at school. Not because school stops them, because they spend so much time at school. There wouldn't be any time left to do those kind of things.
It's the idea of being in a homogeneous class, same age, and learning from similar age group. It's just so plastic. Now I realize it's just my education setup, right? That doesn't work.
Yeah.
Talking about misconceptions, Rosie, I would also want to use this as a segue to talk a little bit about your work life, your second life, right? The way I see it from outside, you're successful. You ran communities for Indie Hacker and you got a success. You've built a successful career in tech. And I feel that unschooling kids and five kids at once is probably is going to take a lot of toll on that. And there's no way anybody could be successful spending a little time on work when you've got that big task of homeschooling or unschooling at hand. How did you break that barrier?
I think I break it because I want to break it. I break it because I enjoy the work that I'm doing. I break it because I'm a bit stupid and I just say yes to stuff.
High five for terrible boundary setters.
I know. It's terrible. I struggle to say no. When we set out with my husband, we were like, let's have two kids. And that ended up being five kids. And mostly my fault, mostly my encouragement. Oh, I just love the kids. I just want more. But yeah, I'm definitely done with kids now. No more kids. But it's interesting because, yes, people look on at my life and think, how can you do it? But at the same time, it's like when you're on school, it's not like you have to sit down and teach your kids 8 hours a day. It just doesn't work like that. You have to manage the kids and manage their time and manage like how you're going to operate things. But it's definitely not 8 hours a day. And we can definitely squeeze things in creative ways. At the same time, me and my husband were a team. So it's not just me. I get asked these questions all the time. My husband doesn't really as much. And that's interesting, right? And that's
yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah. And I point that out not like to have a dig, but it's like, it's the truth. It's, oh, Rosie Sherry, she's so amazing. She has five kids and she unschools. And whilst I say, like, my husband's crazy.
He's crazy too. It's not just me.
They just won't say it with the same, like, amazement kind of thing. It's kind of like I get the credit for being crazy or amazing. But, you know, with my husband, in the early days, make most of the money. But over the years, it's balanced out. And over the years, we've balanced out our commitment to this kind of life. And that means we need to share responsibilities equally. And we need to figure out how to make it work. So, like, I've just started a new job just yesterday, actually. And it's like my first full-time permanent job since I've had kids. So that's interesting.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
But you know, that brings challenges. So we're like figuring stuff out. Like, there's flexibility in the hours that I work, but we figure out the hours. So it's like I'm on with the kids until midday most of the time, and then he takes over after that. So that's how we survive. But it wasn't always like that. And it's been a slow shift again over the years with who takes on what. And it doesn't mean that we do things equally. Again, he's not a morning person. Neither am I, to be honest, but I'm a bit better at mornings than he is. I get up in the morning because of that, to adapt to his needs. And he'll do other things that I'm terrible at because certain things that I don't like to do, like manage our personal finances. So he takes on that. So it's not like we share everything equally. We just figure out how to make it work between us. But with a rough kind of 50% workload each with the kids. It's busy, I won't lie. I'm up at 6 every morning. I go to bed never before midnight. That's just like how I live. But often I have naps. Like if I'm tired, I'll just like have a nap, sneak it in. And yeah, that's our life. But I think also that's any parent's life as well. If you look at any parent, they're like perhaps not quite as much as me, but they don't get a break. Parents don't get a break.
Yeah, somehow we all managed to stitch it together.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would at least let out a secret that it's your 17-year-old Adam doing the actual work when you're sleeping and that's how you make it work.
That was part of the unschooling, teaching him to operate on your laptop.
The side benefits, right?
I've tried to get them involved in my business, but they're not having it yet. So
keep trying. I leave my laptop open sometimes in front of my kid and she's like, Mom, tell me about brand identity. I'm like, okay, I'm so glad you asked. But yes, just tiny little Easter eggs strategically laid.
Yeah.
Talking about benefits or blessings of unschooling, You don't have to take your holidays at the time when it's a peak season, when everybody's off, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
What else?
Yeah, don't go to the parks at the weekends.
Yeah.
Go during the
anytime.
Week. Anytime. Yeah. That's how we live. Even before COVID, we would avoid busy times because, or after school times where like all the kids would like flock to the park, and we would just like avoid that because it's, for us, it's not necessarily fun to, you know, be in such a crowded place.
Yeah. And when you're going, when all the other kids are in school, it's basically a private park.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, yeah, I love that aspect of it. And especially, like, it works for our kids as well, because if they enjoyed being in crowds, then we would encourage that, but none of us do. So it kind of works for us. And it's the same, like, with bedtimes. So,
ooh, I bet this is interesting. Yeah. How do you guys handle bedtimes?
Our three-year-old has a bedtime. She's in bed every night by 7.
Mm-hmm.
Our six-year-old is generally in bed by 8. And she wakes up probably not till 8 or 9, to be honest, most days. She's a big sleeper. I think that's interesting and important because sleep is just so important. And like when they have school, it's, I think quite often they'll end up missing out on sleep because they have to get up early to go to school. My 9-year-old, especially since he used to go to bed like at 10, but since COVID, he's been going to bed like at midnight. But yeah, it works. It's fine.
I love that. No guilt there. So I love that.
There's absolutely no stress behind it. And I think that's special and important. He goes to forest school, actually, and that's just started up again recently. On the nights before that, I make sure that he goes to bed a bit earlier just so that he gets enough sleep. But even that starts at 10:30. So that's not like a super early start either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I feel there's so much to uncover and talk, but we are probably hitting the time as well. Tiffany, is there something that you really want to talk about? And
I feel like we could probably go on for hours, like you said. But yeah, I think that for the meat of it, that really covers things. I so appreciate you talking with us and sharing this whole unschooling idea with me. It's really opened things up that I had never thought about or considered or even knew that was happening out in the world. It's really interesting perspective.
Thank you.
To anyone who wants to get a little bit deeper into this, do you have any recommendations on resources, things that they could follow, even your stuff? I don't know if you're writing about this.
Yeah, well, I have written stuff, but I need to gather it in a proper place, to be honest. But I'll probably have that up soon at unschool.me. There's stuff there at the moment, but it's not great. Or it's not like up to date. But the book that I refer to, Hold On To Your Kids, I would recommend. There's a guy called Peter Gray as well, who's written a few books that are worth checking out. He's part of something called Self-Directed Learning Alliance. There's a website for that, which is worth looking into. I guess unschooling is kind of synonymous, not quite, with self-directed learning. So if people are interested in that, it's worth Googling that term as well. Unschooling does sometimes have a negative connotation to it. So yeah, Google on those terms, self-directed learning. And I guess just follow me on Twitter, because that's where I am like almost every day, at Rosie Sherry.
Done.
We'll put all those links in the notes as well, of course. And thank you for sharing this so openly and just enlightening us on this topic. I'm inspired.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Hey, listeners, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. One of the things that Tiffany and I have been consciously practicing is taking some of these actionables and key lessons and bring it into effect in our own households with our kids. So the next section is really about our take on what we learned from Rosie. And if any of this conversation resonates with you, please let us know on Instagram or Twitter at ReRoutingPod. How is it even possible unschooling 5 kids?
You can easily look at it from that perspective and say, like, how is there even time? But I think she kind of gave us the answer, like there's time because she is not orchestrating, controlling, administering. They are independent. They are having to learn these things on their own or from each other or through their experiences. And for me, this is absolutely mind-blowing because parenting in the U.S. is really different. And there are parents who are doing homeschooling or unschooling or less conventional things, because I think they probably share a lot of the similar views that she has about the structure of schools and society in general. But it is really, really hard to wrap my head around giving Olive all that freedom, because as an adult and as a parent, you know what's best for your kid, right? In my head, I'm always like, no, I know what's best for her. She doesn't know what's best for her. Just like vegetables. Like, yeah, she doesn't like them now, but someday she will. Or she doesn't want to go to bed. She wants to stay up and watch TV, but she'll realize this is good for her someday. Like, I feel like I know what's best, and it always feels like I'm controlling then.
Yeah, and that comes from that position of you being subconsciously superior, knowing it all, and having lived this, so you by default know better, and just letting go of that, you know, higher in this game of life, right?
Well, and sometimes it's probably true, right? Like, we do have more experience. If you touch the fire, it burns your hand. Practical and like also situational experience. Or I know for sure, like, you want your kid not to hurt, not to stumble, not to, but it's like finding that balance of how we learn from our failures and allowing them to have them versus I know what's best. And man, she seems like a master of letting her kids have these failures. And like, what a master. Like, she is like the sensei. I'm going to have to take her advice. Something I think you and I should do is look at something that maybe we don't give Olive and Janis so much freedom on, and like cut the cord, but also tell them.
As she was saying it, the thing that stood out for me was that word, that phrase, saying no and letting go of that, right? I'm a no parent, right? So my default position on any request is no. Like, it's almost like a pattern. I don't even think about it. Like, can I do this? No. And then I think I have to rationalize.
No, and then you're actually, like, actually, I do the same thing. Yeah. I'll say no. And then I'm like, actually, I don't know why I said that. That's totally fine with me if you do that. Like, that's not even a big deal. But I am instantly I'm just like, no, can't.
And the moment you realize that, you realize also that, you know, how many times, if you could let go of that, how many times you wouldn't have to reverse your decision. So there's so many times I've said no and then ended up saying yes. It could have been yes in the first place.
We could have done this 5 minutes ago.
And that five times for five kids, you know, I think you have to really get comfortable saying yes to so many things.
I don't know. I actually can't get over the fact that, like, all that yes in that house with five children, like, so much yes, it's terrifying for me.
Are you going to experiment with that? And the question to you is, what's one thing you're going to take away from today's conversation?
It's not that earth shattering, but it's like she said, she didn't start where she is, and so it's this progression. And so I think that a good place to start is being a little bit more aware and maybe not jumping on the no. And also, something I say to Olive all the time is, Olive, accept the no. Like, we are not having a discussion. We are not going back and forth. Like, the answer is no. Accept the no. And it was all good and fine, except for one day she used it on me. She told me no about something. She said, Mom, accept the no. And I was like, oh, shit. okay, fair enough. So I think just like being aware and accepting, like, what it is she does and doesn't want to do sometimes. And as small and baby steps as I can manage until they're getting much bigger, I'm sure. I'm even scared thinking about, I don't even know what those things could be. I'm terrified. What about you? What are you going to do with Janis?
First of all, it's the opposite situation. He negotiates and bargains and comes back, doesn't accept no. And at times, I don't like it.
Olive's going to be an attorney, I'm convinced. Like, she is a master negotiator. Don't think that I am. It's just a thing that I say. Don't think it ends there.
So what I'm getting to is that I love the fact that I let him have his bargain, and I'm not strict with no. I know that's supposed to be a bad thing, like holding boundaries and stuff. Yeah. But secretly I'm thinking, wow, I want to nurture this side where he doesn't stop. Like he just wants something, he gets it however way, and he's master of words, I know. While I'm saying no, I'm secretly taking pride that I know that he's going to try again, right? And I love
you're,
that part.
You're like, I know he's going to work this out. He'll find a way.
Yeah. With his mom, with me, whatever, right? And outside as well. What I'm going to take away, I think, for me, 8 is a magical number. So I'm going to wait till 8 and life is going to be easy. When he's 8, things will fall in place.
I can't wait to talk in a little bit over 2 years from, just about 2 years from now. Well, let's mark this. I can't wait to see how life has evolved when he is 8 and everything is all of a sudden easy.
Yeah, absolutely. But till then, for next 2 years, I can't wait for more of these banters and episodes and stuff like that. So I'm loving it. I must say that.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this. So I'm enjoying this conversation. Where else would you get people like that? I would have not picked up Rosie Sherry's brain or Carson's brain just out of random, but all for this podcast. So love it.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Hey guys, we hope you're enjoying the show. If you haven't already, head over to reroutingpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. Subscribers receive exclusive updates from Deep and I and are the first to know when there's a new episode out. That's reroutingpod.com. Enter your email and we'll make sure you don't miss a thing.